It's Titans Preview with game day host Rhett Bryan and sideline reporter Jonathan Hutton.
Jonathan Hutton, it is good to be back doing a little Titans Radio podcast. We are just a few weeks away from the NFL draft, and Titans Radio's got you covered. That week of the draft, Wednesday, April 25th, from 6 to 7 Central, countdown to the draft from the East Club of Nissan Stadium for a season ticket member event. That'll kind of get things as we build a fever pitch. Then the next night, Thursday the 26th, that's the first round of the draft from the same location at the draft party, East Club of Nissan Stadium. We will go on the air about 7 p.m. Central and go to about 10:30, 10:45, because obviously the Titans are picking much later. We'll get into that in this podcast. And then Friday night, we will start coverage around 6 Central till about 10:30, covering rounds 2 and 3. And then on Saturday, we'll have probably some coverage in terms of, you know, maybe doing updates at the top and the bottom of the hour. Won't cover rounds 4 through 7 because, quite frankly, the Titans have fewer picks than they've had in many years. But the big thing that's different with Titans Radio draft coverage this year is that on the following Monday, April the 30th, 6 to 7 Central, again at Nissan Stadium. This is a season ticket member event, but it'll be on the air and on stations that are providing coverage throughout the network. The voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, and general manager John Robinson live after he's just spent the previous 96 hours procuring the next Titans, some of which could be stars. Going to be fun.
It is a lot of fun. And that Thursday night of the NFL draft over the last couple of years, one of my favorite nights of the year for the broadcast that we do. Game day cannot – nothing tops our game day coverage and the energy that goes into a broadcast like
it's straight adrenaline.
But the draft night coverage and the unexpected turns that we get that night from teams trading up, trading back. Quarterback run last year is a prime example of that. It's so much fun, and it's cool to have the interaction with the fans live at Nissan Stadium and also the interaction on Twitter at Titans Radio. I have a blast doing it. I'm pumped to be a part of it this year, Rhett, and to do it with you and Mike Keith is certainly a lot of fun.
And, man, this top several picks before we get to the Titans pick, it may be a wild ride because you just talk about Buffalo moving up into the top five to get them a quarterback because they sent Tyrod Taylor in a trade to the Cleveland Browns. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to go over a lot of material and not just the Titans, but kind of what things – we may even do a little mock draft and maybe take the first 10 picks or so, and I'd like to see eventually what you think the Titans will do at number 25 in the first round if they stay there. They may trade back. We don't know. Don't see him trading up because he doesn't have as much currency, but he could trade back. So we'll do a lot of things, and we'll need your questions at hashtag Titans Preview. Some of you have already sent in some that we will answer at the end of this podcast, but we will have – all of these things we will do for you in these podcasts in the coming weeks, but hashtag Titans Preview.
That's an element of the podcast this year that we didn't really feature last year because we had so much to feature last year in the lead up to the first round of the draft. The Titans holding two picks at number 5 and number 18 and so many different scenarios to piece together, ultimately drafting Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson at picks 5 and 18. But, Rhett, I'm excited. Pick 25, a lot of different possibilities with what the Titans have done in free agency now and how it sets up for what John Robinson can do at pick number 25. Hashtag Titans Preview. Use that on Twitter. Send your questions in via Twitter and social media. That's how you can get those questions to us, and we'll discuss those topics throughout April right here on Titans Preview at TitansRadio.com.
All right, Jonathan, let's go down the free agency path. We have not done a podcast in a while. This is the first of three or four here that, as we lead into the draft. But let's talk about the Titans and what they've done in free agency. They've been more active than I think a lot of folks would have expected them to be. And, you know, the crazy thing is I saw the other day per, I think, Spotrac, they still have like $40 million in cap room. I don't understand how that works. I'm not a capologist. I'm not Vin Marino. But here's how it goes. So gone from the Titans, Sly Williams, defensive lineman, signed a year ago on a 3-year contract. He is now a Detroit Lion. Avery Williamson, drafted by the Titans 4 years ago. He signs a 3-year deal with the Jets. Safety Curtis Riley goes back to his home state and does a deal with the New York Giants. Quarterback Brandon Whedon, who was brought in late in the year as a Titan, goes back to the Houston Texans for another tour of duty there to back up Deshaun Watson. And Denoris Searcy, he was one that was released prior to free agency in a wave there. He signs a two-year deal to be a safety with the Carolina Panthers after they've had a parting of ways with a lot of their secondary in Carolina. Eric Decker is gone. He visited the Oakland Raiders a few days ago. Still no deal for him. DeMarco Murray visited Seattle and forget where else. But he's
from Miami was one.
That's right. And he still does not have a deal, correct?
He's still out there, right? Available. Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of the departures in addition to quarterback Matt Castle. And I'm sure I'm probably missing somebody else. But the additions are as follows. And we'll go in kind of no particular order. But early on, they re-signed kicker Ryan Succop to a five-year contract, made him one of the highest paid kickers in the league.
Which is important because – not because he's the highest paid kicker in the league. I'm happy for Ryan in that regard. I'm glad that they went ahead and made that decision to bring him back on board, because if you notice, there was not much of a kicker market in free agency.
There was not. I think if anybody was looking over the fence to see if the green grass is greener, you might have looked at a Graham Gano in Carolina or somebody like that, but they immediately locked him up.
Right.
Yeah, it was thin. And look, Dance with the one that brung you. I mean, Ryan Succop has done really well in four seasons as the Titans kicker, and his accuracy way up in the 80th percentile and puts him in some of the better company of current kickers in the league. Very happy for him. And that locks up that core unit of special teams guys. Bo Brinkley's under a long-term deal. Brett Kern's under a long-term deal. And those guys all work so well together, and they're staying together that way. I thought that was a good move there for sure. They tendered guard Quentin Spain, lowest available tender. So someone could sign him to an offer sheet. They have first right of refusal to match it. But basically, this says to me, and we'll get into this in a second with who else they've added, but that the competition is about to pick up seriously in that neighborhood of the line. On the offensive line, they re-signed defensive lineman David King, who they had traded for right before the regular season last year from the Kansas City Chiefs. And my biggie on the list of their own free agents, nose tackle Daquan Jones. They had to re-sign this guy. He had played so well right there at the end of the year before he ruptured his bicep.
Well, and he had a career high in starts. Career high in starts last season. He started 12 games for the Titans defense. That goes unnoticed. A lot of people are pointing to the way he ended the season right before the injury, where he had a career high in sacks. He had 3.5 sacks and was really rushing the passer well. But they were relying on him to be a key piece to what they were doing defensively up front, and he provided that up until he got hurt.
And I have no doubt he had other suitors despite the injury, just because he is a solid player. He was drafted here. He's been procured and brought along here. He's a guy, I like, and I like the fact that he's still a Titan. That was a big one for me. They re-signed Josh Klein to a multi-year deal at right guard and pay him quite a bit of money. And I guess that market was reset when Andrew Norwell leaves the Carolina Panthers, goes to Jacksonville, and gets an average of $13.5 million at guard, which is going to tell you, in my mind, really right, kind of resets what the left tackle market is going to be. Nate Solder got money, but I feel like that Taylor DeJuan's going to get eclipse that.
Oh, Taylor DeJuan is about to break the bank, and rightfully so with the way that market is headed. Josh Klein was interesting, because under the old system, the old offense, Rhett, that may be one that I'd shake my head out with bringing him back. But with this new system, with the zone blocking scheme, where I thought Klein really excelled last year is when they had him on the move. When he was the pulling guard on some of those run plays, I thought he was pretty good in those certain situations. Mm-hmm. Now, he has played in 30 games for the Titans over the previous two seasons since they acquired him from the Patriots when he was waived. There is some value there with this new offense, the zone blocking scheme. They need to be more mobile up front with their offensive linemen, a little bit quicker in certain situations. Klein can provide that.
So they give him some quite a bit of money there. They add a backup quarterback. They cut and released Matt Cassel along with Denoris Cersei and two or three other players a couple of days before free agency began. So they signed quarterback Blaine Gabbert, the former 10th overall pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2011, that same draft class year of Jake Locker. The guy has, I think, 45 career starts. Started, I think, 11 games in the last two seasons, including five last year for the Arizona Cardinals after Carson Palmer broke his arm. And he beat the Titans right there at the end of the season. He's a Missouri guy, 6'4", big dude, young enough. He's 28 years old, still has a good arm. I like this addition just because you talk about a market. It was a maybe it's this way every year, and I haven't paid attention because you haven't really been going to get a backup, but it was a very active offseason for backup quarterbacks in free agency.
Well, here's the thing about Gabbert that Cassel could not bring them. And Cassel was a great guy and a good player at some point, but we saw last year Mariota went down, missed the Miami game, and offensively they could not really do anything but hand the football off. Gabbert, while is he the best backup option in the league? No, I wouldn't put him in that category. But where I would say, if Mariota goes down, and he missed a game last year, he's missed games throughout his career. If Mariota goes down, Rhett, Gabbert gives them the ability to at least run their full offense. You know, they don't have to go to a third of the playbook and say, okay, now we can just move to this section of the playbook because that's what the quarterback can do. Gabbert is more mobile than what he gets credit for.
Yes.
Not saying he's as mobile as Marcus Mariota,
right,
but he's allowed to run that same system. Mm-hmm. Quick passing, dissecting the defense, knowing man zone and getting the ball out quickly, designated routes for certain receivers. That's what we're going to see with the Matt LaFleur offense. Gabbert should be able to fit in nicely with all that and pick it up quickly.
And certainly, I started with kind of the most recent things and moving forward, but they made a big splash on the first day of free agency and getting a couple of former Patriots and cornerback Malcolm Butler and running back Deion Lewis. I think this kind of shocked Titans fans because John Robinson, heading into season number three as the general manager, has done some things. He traded for DeMarco Murray 2 years ago. He traded away the number one pick. But he hasn't really made like a super huge splash on the first day of free agency. Well, any Titans fan that had that hanging over him in his resume, they can check that one off the list. That was a kind of a shock to me. But listen, I like both signings. I think Deion, both of these guys. And again, the mantra, nobody wants me. Zero or one-star recruit, and I didn't get any offers, and just scratching their way and clawing their way into the league. I mean, you think about that first day that they talked to the media, Malcolm Butler from Vicksburg, Mississippi. He said, man, where I come from, Steve McNair is a legend. We love
that that rang true with you, right?
Yes.
Because you're a huge fan of Steve McNair.
Without a doubt.
And I grew up watching him play. You were around the man. I was only around him from one season. My first season with Titans Radio was Steve McNair's last season in Nashville. You knew him very well, Rhett, and you know what that meant to people that had been around the organization for as long as...
It immediately. Yeah. And, you know, even... There was something made about him saying most definitely. That was a crutch phrase of the late, great Steve McNair. He would always say most definitely. There's something in the water down there with that. But there's a guy that, first of all, he addressed all that stuff about the benching of the Super Bowl. He tried to address it as much as he could. He had a statement that came out prior to the day that he signed, and I thought that was smart of him to address those things. And here's a guy that clearly has got a chip on his shoulder because of that. He wants to go prove something. He will go prove something. And listen, on paper right now, this may be a top five secondary in the National Football League for the Tennessee Titans. Because you think about it, you've got Logan Ryan, Adoree Jackson, Kevin Byard, Jonathan Cyprian, and now Malcolm Butler.
Well, and specifically with Butler, did not start coming right into the league, but earned his way onto the field for the New England Patriots. Not a big corner, but a good corner for a scheme of the defense that the Titans will be running and should be able to step in and be familiar with what they're doing from the jump. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's the thing about Butler and Deion Lewis. They're big game experience from both players. and they know how to work. And what I mean by that, they know from a Vrabel perspective and from John Robinson's perspective, they know that Malcolm Butler and Deion Lewis will come in and work the way they expect their players within the Titans organization to work. And that's the thing about free agency that you don't get with the draft. You don't really know those players all that well because they're behind lock and key with other organizations for so many years, unless you scouted them the way John Robinson or Mike Vrabel have done with some of these guys. They know what they're going to be like, not just on the field from what they can see on the full all 22 film, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
But they know what they're going to be like in the meeting rooms, in the locker room, on the practice field, on game day. Those things are big in free agency. And I think when you're vetting guys in free agency, you can watch a ton of film to see if that player fits physically. But you don't really know who they are. And I think that's the advantage of signing both of these players. From John Robinson and Mike Vrabel's perspective, they know exactly the type of player they're getting. It did not surprise either one of them that Butler and Lewis took it as personal as they did in that first press conference to say, look, we got paid. Career's not over yet. We're just getting started. That was the message from both of them.
Listen, Deion Lewis, he won me over in the first 5 minutes he's talking. He got choked up twice.
I know.
In his opening I mean, it was gut-wrenching almost to see the passion from him and to talk about nobody's ever wanted me and people are going to feel my pain when they see the success that I'm about to have. Not did have in New England. About to have, and he's a small guy. He's a jitterbug, water bugs type running back, but can catch the ball out of the backfield. And he's just again carrying that chip on his shoulder. Like I said, I'm really excited for both of these additions.
And just going back to the point, you mentioned the chip on the shoulder. If you're giving guys big money contracts in free agency, you want them to have that same chip on their shoulder that they did coming out of a D2 school.
Yes.
Or having to prove it as a late-round draft pick. Keep that same momentum throughout their career. It's tough to find because some guys, you know, they'll get big paydays, and then you don't have the same production from them because once they sign on the dotted line, there's this weight off their shoulders like, wow.
I've arrived,
yeah. And I've made it. I did it. And there's still a sense with both of these players. Now, we've yet to see a snap on a practice field yet. There's still a sense with both of these players that there is no sense of kicking back and thinking, okay, it's time to coast now because we're up at the top. That I heard none of that from their press conference.
No,
that was refreshing.
Not at all. And then they close out or finish up to this point in free agency with something that you touched on a moment ago with the protection of Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota missed a game here and there and certainly had his time out with injury and protection. 27 quarterback sacks, up 4 quarterback sacks from a year before at 23. And it's clear that is a priority, is keeping him upright and protected. And that's why they went and got a couple of veteran offensive linemen. Recently, they take former Buccaneers tackle/guard Kevin Pamphiel, who John Robinson knows from his time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was the director of player personnel for the Bucs with GM Matt Light down there. And so he knows him, procured him, brought him in. A lot of experience there with that guy.
Versatile. He can play, and I believe he has played throughout his football career, every spot on the offensive line, but primarily guard and tackle.
Right.
So that's someone that can slide in and play wherever you might need him. But don't look at him as a backup. He is being brought in to start at the left guard spot and compete against Quentin Spain from the get-go.
And that's why I was saying what I was saying earlier about Quentin Spain being tendered at the lowest offer available. In other words, you sign him and sign him for enough money on an offer sheet, and he's probably gone. And then they bring in a Houston Texan and offensive lineman Xavier Suafilo, another guy, a lot of experience, 41 starts at guard for the Texans.
A guy that I remember, I remember Mike Dettillier speaking on him a few years back during Titans Radio's draft coverage. 33rd pick in 2014. You mentioned the starts in the NFL, and over the past two seasons, he has started 31 games at left guard for the Texans. But here's what I remember from college. He was the Pac-12 Offensive Lineman of the Year in his final season, 2013. He started every game of his college career at UCLA. And he started 21 games at left guard. He had 19 starts at left tackle at UCLA. He's 27 years old, and he's only been in the league 4 years. He's older because he took 2 years. Once he got to UCLA, he took 2 years off to go on his Mormon mission and then returned to college. So they bring in a guy that's a little bit older in years, doesn't have as much NFL experience as a 27-year-old might going into a second or sometimes third contract, depending on how those things worked out in the draft and undrafted free agency. But, you know, he came into the league on merit, the 33rd overall pick in the draft, first pick of the second round. Mike Dettillier, I believe, had him ranked as the top guard of that draft.
We are currently recording this in the Titans radio studio. Right over there is the M&D draft report from 2014. Xavier Suofilo was his number one rated offensive guard in that year's M&D draft.
Yeah, so it's not a fluke that he was drafted as high as he was and then, you know, moved around. The Texans drafted him to start, and he has been starting for them on the offensive line. And I like what they've done up front now with Spain and Pamphile and Suofilo battling for a spot. Ben Jones and Josh Klein at center and right guard. Lawan and Conklin are your edges, which are great. And you have Dennis Kelly and Corey Levin as backups. And what we don't know in all this is Conklin's availability right from the get-go of the season with the torn ACL that he suffered in the final game in the playoffs against New England.
Because it is conceivable he could start on the physically unable
perform
list and as we begin the 2018 season.
So we're speaking on these guys as guards, but both have tackle experience throughout their career. And then Dennis Kelly, of course, is a guy who can play on the outside too. So I think it strengthens the entire group of the O-line. They get some guys that have started games in the National Football League and guys that can compete and push the current starters for jobs, which is important.
So that's kind of a big gloss over of what the Titans have done in free agency. And I think they did well in free agency. I like the moves that they made. I mean, think about it. They not only bolstered, but have started this competition for a better offensive line, as you've just alluded to. They've got a backup quarterback. They got a change of pace running back. They got a top-notch cornerback. You know, I feel like they addressed a lot of things, and this leads us to the NFL draft as we get closer to that a month out here. And where are the Titans' needs now after they've plugged in some pieces here and there? And we'll go through a lot of this stuff in just a moment as far as the strength of the draft by position and what does that any of those match up with the Titans' needs. But here's the deal with the Titans' picks this year. First of all, they only have 6 picks currently. The 7th-round pick they had this year was dealt to Kansas City last summer, right before the regular season, for defensive lineman David King. It was a conditional pick, so obviously he met enough of the conditions there as far as his performance on field, where they dealt that and they got to keep that. The Chiefs got to keep that 7th-round pick. So they have 6 picks. First round, 25th pick overall. Second round, 57th pick overall. Third round, pick 89. Round 4, pick 125. Round 5, pick 162. And round 6, pick 199. That just
not
reminds me who was the 199th pick in the 6th round.
Oh, Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. I just happened to think about that as I'm reading that. So
not a lot of draft currency that we're used to seeing with John Robinson with the deal making that goes on draft weekend.
That's exactly right. So that leads us to, with the pieces that they put in place, what do the Titans need heading into this draft? And that doesn't mean they won't continue to get a free agent, because now that we're getting into the third phase of free agency where you get a signing from somebody later in the spring, which he's been known to do. But let's see if your idea of what they need matches up with what I'm thinking. You know, I still think maybe a wide receiver, but
I agree.
Jim Wyatt of TitansOnline.com, the senior writer and editor, had a nice piece the other day talking to both Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, and the current word from them is that they're pleased with who they have personnel-wise in that group. Now, that doesn't mean they won't change their mind or somebody, but it seems like they're okay with status quo right now as we speak, which you know, in a way is surprising, but it's a vote of confidence for somebody like Rishard Matthews. And then certainly you have a Corey Davis and a Taywan Taylor and a Tajay Sharp coming off of a foot surgery.
I think from a depth standpoint, they're okay at wide receiver. I would like to see them add more speed at the position. Mm-hmm. So that would be an area for an upgrade. And if I'm upgrading this offseason, it's because I know I've found a long-term solution that brings some speed to the outside that complements Corey Davis, because Corey Davis is still the centerpiece of the group, mm-hmm. the drafted fifth overall for a reason.
Right.
What complements him? And Rishard Matthews, I believe, going into the final year of his contract?
Yes, that's correct.
I believe he signed a three-year contract.
Three-year deal, so he's going to year three of that.
All things to consider, I really like Rishard Matthews for what he brings to the roster. But if you're thinking long-term instead of just 2018, that would be another reason to draft a receiver if you think that it's the future complement to Corey Davis.
So that's a place where I still think they may add a piece or a player, but it's not their biggest need.
I agree.
To me, I think you, in whatever order you want, inside linebacker and pass rusher. You're going to need an inside linebacker just because Avery Williamson is now a New York Jet. And you're we said it a lot when we did podcasts like this in the fall. I felt like he was going to leave in free agency. He was going to get some nice money. Avery's a great young man, but I feel like it's a chance for them to upgrade the position. I really do.
I agree on inside linebacker and pass rusher. You and I have been talking about pass rusher for how many years now? It's like the running joke.
Well,
and look, how you expect them to go.
I always preface this with the utmost respect, and no disrespect to Derek Morgan or Brian Arakpo, but they haven't had a pass rusher since Javon Kearse or maybe Kyle VandenBosch.
Yeah, and when you say pass rusher, you're also the true pass rusher you're speaking of, and the same guy I have in my mind is Javon Kearse, because he was a game changer. He was a game wrecker, and you had to game plan against that guy
every week.
That was the difference between 8-8 the year prior and what put them over the hump that made the big playoff run and the big run to 13-3 with the Music City Miracle and everything else that turned into what was a great run to the Super Bowl.
For younger listeners of this podcast that were a little bit, that Javon was a little bit before your time, because we are 20 seasons into Titans football, to your point, first of all, no one still has surpassed his rookie record for quarterback sacks, which still stands
right
20 seasons later at 14.5 quarterback sacks. And you're right. He was a big difference in why they went three consecutive 8-8 seasons to 13-3 in a Super Bowl appearance. Think about this. He was a part of a team that went 26-6 in the regular season in his first two seasons in the NFL. When he left the Titans to get a big free agent contract for the Philadelphia Eagles, he had 48.5 quarterback sacks as a young man.
I'm with you on pass rush, with you on inside linebacker. Let me throw you a couple of other spots. Nose tackle. They were looking at Ndamukong Suh for a reason. Excellent talent, but mix and match. They want someone that can plug and play at different spots on that defensive line. And with Dean Pease, what we have seen in going back and looking at previous rosters that he's been involved with in Baltimore, they've always had that space eater, the 300-plus pound nose tackle.
Lodi Nada.
Exactly.
Yep.
There are a couple of those type players in this draft in rounds 2 through 4 to keep an eye on, and we can get into that in a later podcast.
Sure.
But to me, that could be a potential draft pick for a position. And backup safety. You know, I would look to add some depth at the safety position with Denora Searcy getting cut.
And, you know, it just recurred to me. I missed one person that departed with the Titans, and that's Carl Klug. And that's a guy that was drafted in the, I think, fifth round, played 7 years with the team. He was released just a few days ago. What a fantastic person. We'll definitely miss his presence in the locker room and on the field. But so, yeah, there's some depth issues there. But I think you're right. A Dean Pease defense needs a space eater. If you think about all those old
run
Baltimore.
Stuffer.
Right. All those old Baltimore Ravens, Titans, 12-8 clashes. They had Sam Adams in there. That was a monster. And then you think about Dean Pease with the Patriots. He had Vince Wilfork, who I think is one of, hands down, one of the best nose tackles to ever play the position. Very nimble for a guy as big as Vince Wilfork was.
You know, top end of the draft would be a guy like Daron Payne who could move across the defensive line. And again, I don't think it necessarily has to be just a nose tackle. I think what they want is versatility. That's what Ndamukong Suh would have brought because he can line up a defensive end in the 3-4. It's all about gap control, and he can play certain gaps across that defensive front. So Daron Payne's the top end of that. But, you know, the second round maybe would be like a Tim Settle from Virginia Tech. And those are all players we can get into later.
Sure.
But player names to just keep a watch out for that I've started to look at clips and different things from their college days.
All right. So this poses the question, Titans needs thus far now, first couple of waves of free agency heading into the draft, do those needs meet? Are they going to be met with strength by position in this draft class? And I'll go the first one.
Okay.
You said backup safety. If you're looking to draft a safety, after Derwin James with the Florida State Seminoles, it's a huge drop-off. It's not a great class for safety.
No, it's not, because what you don't have, to me, is the versatility of the safeties for the top end of this draft. You know, it goes from Derwin James to a guy like Ronnie Harrison from Alabama. Ronnie Harrison from Alabama is not a single high safety in the league just because of the speed. You know, they would use him in different ways at Bama that maybe an NFL team would like to use him more in single high in coverage and do different things. Derwin James is going to be a high-end draft pick for a reason. And then after that, it's guys like Justin Reed, who's probably more of a free safety. And then you're looking at second and third round type guys. So value at 25, I'm not so sure it's a safety.
One of the good things for the Titans in this draft is it is rich in pass rushers. There are plenty of them. Now, I think Lott would argue that after Bradley Chubb from NC State, which he could be a top five pick, it drops off a little bit. But there are lots of good key pass rushers in this. Like University of Texas San Antonio, Marcus Davenport is a name you're going to hear.
Yep.
There'll be a lot of critique on him just because he's a big guy. He hadn't quite filled into his frame yet. He may be a 4-3 defensive end in the league, but you've got a Harold Landry from Boston College, Arden Key from LSU, Sam Hubbard from Ohio State. That's somebody, if you're a Titans fan, to have on your radar. He's an Ohio State Buckeye. That looks like a guy that might be a Mike Vrabel kind of guy. Will he be at 25? I don't know.
You know, and there's another guy that played on that defense, Tyquan Lewis, that's also a pass rusher that's not as well known, but again, is a Buckeye that is in this draft at defensive end. But you're right. For teams looking for just a straight pass rusher, guys that could play the 4-3 end or outside linebacker, there are plenty of guys to choose from. And some of the players that you mentioned are listed under the defensive end category that may be better suited for outside linebacker. And some of the outside linebackers that played that way in college may be better suited for the 4-3 end.
And you know what? And that's a prime example of what we were just talking about with a Javon Kearse, because he was what they always call a tweener. What is he? Is he a 4-3 defensive end? He's an outside linebacker with his hand in the dirt.
Harold Landry's a good example.
Right.
Harold Landry, who's just a straight speed guy at Boston College, is better suited as an outside linebacker because of his size. He's built a lot like Derek Morgan in size and weight. And to me, he's better suited at outside linebacker at the next level.
If you want to try to upgrade linebacker position, which is also something you want to work on with this Titans needs, especially inside, there's some good name. I mean, Roquan Smith from Georgia, you've got him in there. You've got Rashawn Evans from Alabama.
Leighton Van Der Esch from Boise State.
Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech is a name.
Oh, he's going high.
That dude is a monster.
Yeah.
The kid from Boise State, Leighton Van Der Esch. You'll hear a lot about him, but Tremaine Edmonds, keep your eye on that guy. That dude.
Leighton Van Der Esch. Tremaine Edmonds. Rhett, if he's available at 25, I'll be shocked. He's a very,
<go get him.
laughs> very good player. Leighton Van Der Esch is one to watch. Greg Cosell told me this on Midday 180 and 104.5 this morning. He said, take a look at this kid. He looks like a Mike Vrabel-type player. So I watch a little bit of film. I actually watched the Boise State-Virginia game, And there's a linebacker, Kaiser, for Virginia that's probably a sixth or seventh round pick that is just strictly an inside linebacker, middle linebacker for rundowns, two down backer. But someone that I've been watching caught my eye, but I was watching for Leighton Vander Esch. And the thing about Vander Esch that you immediately see, he has the ability to dissect exactly where the block is coming from the offense, get around the block, get around the offensive lineman at the second level while keeping his momentum going forward on rundowns. It's the strangest things I've ever...
Wow.
He's able to run forward and maneuver and tweak his body enough, but keep his momentum going towards the play and not get pushed outside of the zone that he's instructed to stay in. It's fascinating to watch. He's a good player, solid player, and one that has gained a lot of steam since the combine.
And I tell you, while we're talking about linebackers and some of the strengths in this draft, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention probably the most interesting player in this draft in Shakeem Griffin from University of Central Florida. What an incredible story. He was a rock star at the combine. You were there. You saw what he did. 20 reps at 225 with basically one hand. And, you know, fastest linebacker in the 40 in 15 years. It's going to be interesting to see where he's taken. And I don't think you can question his heart, his ability, his want to, his love of football, the whole thing. And if you're not familiar with Shakeem Griffin, he's the guy that he has one arm, one hand. His left hand, I believe it is, was amputated when he was 4 years old. He had this rare birth defect called amniotic band syndrome, where your fingers don't fully develop. It's apparently extremely painful. He had that amputated at the age of four and came into UCF as a defensive back. His brother, Shaquille Griffin's a defensive back with the Seahawks drafted last year.
And just to pick up there, he was only signed at UCF so they could get his brother. That's how they recruited him.
George O'Leary signed both of them. That's right. That's right.
The old staff at UCF brought him there so they could sign his brother to make sure that Shaquille Griffin would go to school there. That's a crazy story. And he ends up being the defensive player of the year in his conference last year.
And he had a fantastic pro day to follow up his combine. That's going to be a guy to watch on draft weekend. It's an incredible story, and you just root for the guy. You can't help but root for him.
Could he be a day two pick? Like, into the third round?
I see him in as high as there and as late as fifth round.
Yep. He's been invited and has accepted a trip to the NFL draft.
Yes, that's exactly right. So there's kind of where we are with this first podcast. And as promised through the hashtag Titans Preview, we will answer your questions. So I'm going to get you to answer the questions. I'm just going to ask them here, Jonathan.
Okay.
Let's go from Twitter. Zach says, what do you guys see as a bigger need for the Titans, pass rusher or middle linebacker? So we kind of glossed over that there, but what do you really think? Which one's the bigger need?
Zach, just based on depth right now, I would go with inside linebacker because off the top of my head, the two starters at inside linebacker right now are Wesley Woodyard and Nate Palmer,
who are over 30 years old, both of them.
And backups being Jayon Brown. Jayon Brown has a chance to be used more. But still has a ways to go in being that true three-down inside linebacker. Darren Bates, special teams guy.
Right.
And those are your inside linebackers, those four.
Right.
Outside linebacker and pass rush, I feel better about because you have Derek Morgan, Brian Arakpo. You have backups there and Kevin Dodd and Aaron Wallace, Josh Caraway, who are still available. So is the need pressing? I say yes. But if you're asking me which one I'd be more concerned with going into the season right now after free agency, it's inside linebacker.
Just because you lost an Avery Williamson and you have an aging interior linebacking core there outside of a Jayon Brown.
Yep.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. This is from Josh. Plenty of talk about needing to draft edge, pass rusher, and linebacker. Agree, but not hearing much about safety. How does this rank among the team needs, and who could we potentially target? You mentioned it in the needs that you think they have to address, and that's depth at safety. And I think you're right.
Yeah. Now, they have some guys that I think could play corner or safety. They like the versatility of Kalen Reed. Ty Smith, I think, could play a little safety if they had to use him there. And I think with the way that when what they've done in free agency, Rhett, we'll see a lot of three-corner looks with their defense, where you bring in an extra linebacker as well, and maybe you only have one safety with Byard on the field. I'm just trying to envision what they're doing right now with the depth that they have.
And it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they think of a Denzel Johnson. Don't forget, they had him on the roster last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They signed him to a futures contract January the 15th of this year, the same day that they parted ways with Mike Mularkey. That's I don't know if that's a camp body to get him through or if that's somebody they really like and they're interested in.
But losing Searcy and losing Riley,
right?
There's a spot there that depth would be a concern for me, and I would go with a young body in the draft to fill the depth behind Kevin Byard and Jonathan Cyprian to pair with Denzel Washington as a backup. Brendan Trawick, he's a special teamer.
Yeah. Josh also says really like Shaquem Griffin. What would be a realistic round to draft him? I think somewhere in third, fourth, fifth round.
Yeah, I think he's a potential day two pick at the very end of the third round.
Now he's a smaller guy.
He's a smaller guy, but man, he's not afraid of contact.
And he can fly.
His speed is really going to help him.
4.38 40.
His speed and his heart are really going to help him. Yeah. And I think there will be a team that falls in love with him. If you're asking for a prediction, it's going to be a day three prediction for me. Fifth, sixth round for Shaquem Griffin. Although it's a great story.
All right, one last one from Twitter. Jumproot says, which player are you on the fence about 1 month before the draft? Now, this is a great question.
Yes.
I've got one. I'm sure you've got somebody in mind.
Go.
I think if I'm starting with, a player that you're going to hear a lot about in the next 4 weeks is Marcus Davenport from the University of Texas, San Antonio.
That's what I just pulled up.
Don't really know what he is, like his upside. You always hear that upside potential word thrown around. Is off the charts, but you're going to hear a lot of analysis and critique about what is he at the next level.
Okay, since you went with Davenport, I'll go with the next guy, the smaller school guy on the list that's about to get a big push from draft analysts because he's going to have his pro day. A lot of analysts are starting to hear from scouts now after the combine and after different things about certain players. Darius Leonard is a linebacker for South Carolina State. Small dude. I say small. He's 6'2", 230. He looks small to me on film when I watched him. And I've heard from a lot of people about him, so I went to YouTube, pulled up a few games, played really well against Clemson. He was offered a preferred walk-on spot for Clemson. That was his one Division I chance out of high school. He weighed 180 pounds in high school. Like a lot of us did. But my point is, he did not have a Division I offer. He had to go to South Carolina State, and he's done really well. He did really well at South Carolina State. But it's hard to actually find. It's a lot like Marcus Davenport. It's hard to find a comparison when he's going against Morgan State and Youngstown Right. State and all these different. It's just tough to really get a feel for how good he could be. He's very fast. But a lot of times I would see him get swept up by the second level of offensive linemen coming up to make a big block for him. You can find games against there's some of the smaller D1 schools in Florida that South Carolina State would play money games against. I mentioned Clemson. You can find games where you can go and watch him play. I'm just not completely sold on him yet to where I'm willing to buy in on him. And I feel the same way you do about Marcus Davenport. I don't know how those guys translate and how the NFL talent will match up to their talent. Talented, athletic, but have they ever seen competition like they're going to face in week one of the National Football League? No, not even close.
I think for the next podcast, or at least one of these that we do prior to the draft, provided that John Robinson stays at number 25 in the first round, I think it's going to be interesting. And we should do a mock draft, I think, to see what potentially could fall in your lap there. Because we talk about, well, there this guy's not going to be there by then. This guy, you got to remember, this is a year for quarterbacks. There's a ton of them, and there's at least you could see quarterback in the first three picks, provided the Buffalo doesn't jump in the fray and get into the top five themselves. Keep in mind, whenever that happens, it pushes a guy a slot lower. and another slot lower and another slot lower, because I remember like it was yesterday sitting in a portable trailer at the Titans facility in Bellevue by the Bellevue Mall doing coverage, helping the broadcaster with the coverage of the 1999 NFL draft. And it all changed when the Colts took Edgerrin James that high, but it really changed when Mike Ditka gave up the farm to get Ricky Williams, and it pushed a guy like Javon Kearse at number 16 right into the lap of the Tennessee Titans and changed it forever.
We need to discuss who you think that player could be this year on next week's edition of the podcast.
I think it'll be good. And as we close out this podcast, we lead up to the NFL draft. That's not the only thing that's happening for the two-tone blue. It's no secret. The uniform is about to change for the first time in 20 seasons for the Tennessee Titans. And so Titans Radio will have a little coverage on our flagship 104.5 The Zone here in Nashville. And I'm sure all of you have heard there's a giant party downtown at Riverfront Park at First and Broadway. The schedule goes like this. There's a pre-party at FGL House, which is Florida Georgia Line, at 4 p.m. Central. Then at 5:30, food and drink on Broadway. And there will be vendors and things throughout there as folks gather for the event. At 6 Central, the event site activities begin. And so that's probably where we'll have a little time on the air to talk about what's leading up to the big unveil, which is at 7:30, followed by Florida Georgia Line concert at 8. And then get this, they're having fireworks at 9 o'clock right there at the river. And then at 9:10, a post-party event at FGL House. So let me say this. This is going to be a big
it's
deal.
It's a blowout.
And my goodness, are the questions galore about what is this thing going to look like? How drastic is the change going to be? Amy Adams Strunk has dropped little hints here and there. Our colleague Paul Kuharski has kind of drilled her for intel and every day wanting to know something about this. And Jonathan, I don't know about you, but everywhere I go, anyone that knows anything to do with what we do on the broadcast, you've seen the uniform, right? I'm like, no, I haven't seen it. I swear I have not seen it. You and I both know people that who have, but have been sworn to secrecy. I have no clue. I have an idea about what it looks like based on little descriptions and things, but we don't know if that's true. And we're not in the circle of trust here.
Brett, so I get this question maybe not as much as you do, but I have been asked quite a bit, and you're asked about it quite a bit at different school shows that you're doing with the Titans and things like that. I'm to the point where I'm glad I haven't seen the uniform, because I don't have to keep the secret.
Yeah, imagine the pressure. Right.
Amy Adams Strunk has done such a great job at building and creating the hype behind this jersey reveal and the uniform reveal. You mentioned Paul Kuharski. His website has shut down twice by posting the most minute detail about these uniforms over the last several months.
Let's go ahead and give him a free plug here. PaulKuharski.com.
Yes, he'll appreciate that. Wow. He says thank you. Yeah, his site has shut down twice because of the amount of traffic just by posting. And he admits it on the tweets. Hey, this is a small detail about the uniform. Click here. And it immediately shuts down the site. So that's the interest in it. Also, Amy Adams Strunk, in keeping the secret, it's tough to do in this day and age. Keeping that on under lock and key and with the amount of people that maybe have laid eyes on it, she has a photo of the uniform on her cell phone. And instead of like texting it to John Robinson or Mike Vrabel, instead of sending it via email to someone, she will just go up and show you her phone and say, here's what it looks like. What do you think? And then remove it from you so you can't do anything with it. It's just in your mind, and that's it. So no one physically has that image to send around except for Amy Adams Strunk and, of course, Nike. But they're in the business of keeping these things and building up and hyping the event. They've done a great job with this as well.
Let me say this, and I don't know if this is public knowledge, and I'm not giving any secrets away here, but from what I understand, someone that told me inside their building, when the final product was brought in for last review or whatever, I think they made everyone leave the building that was not involved in seeing. I mean, that kind of wall, this is like a Fort Knox gold kind of security level thing going on here to show to the proper folks, which I'm assuming would be Amy Adams Strunk and Coach Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, and you know, maybe you know, those small. But wow. From what I understand, that stuff, they made everyone like get in a different part of the building or get out of the building. From what I understand, I'm like, this is absolutely crazy.
You've been a part of these big jersey reveals before. You were on site right outside at the time Adelphia Coliseum for the Titans unveiling of the uniforms back in 1999.
Well, I'll tell you this, and it is nothing like what we were about to see in the coming days with this party, with the concert with Florida Georgia Line at Riverfront Park next week in downtown Nashville. It was a spring day in 1999. In what is about, I would say, parking lot A or B on the east side of what is now Nissan Stadium. The stadium obviously was not finished because it's the spring before the first season in the fall. And it was not a great big affair like this is turning out to be. There was obviously media there, and I'm sure there was some fans there. I don't remember exactly, but I wasn't overwhelmed by a huge crowd. I don't remember that. But I do remember
the middle of the day.
It was like a spring afternoon, middle of the day or early afternoon on a weekday in the parking lot where they had rented a stage and had props like the Roman columns and, you know, a couple of ferns sitting on or whatever. You've seen pictures of those things.
Yes.
And it was punter Craig Hendrick and safety Blaine Bishop, tight end Frank Wycheck, and running back Eddie George. They were the guys that came out for the first time in Titans two-tone blue. And I remember it was just prior to the first Titans caravan, because on the caravan, we were allowed to carry the first real prototype, and it was Craig Hendrick's number 15 jersey, a first Titan jersey in the spring of 1999. That will pale in comparison by what we were about to see here in the coming days. It's kind of weird that's been that long ago.
And they'll have players out there, right, to unveil the uniforms.
I would certainly think that they would have current players. You know, there's a lot of guys that hang out and work out here now.
But next week, players will report for OTAs.
Well, that's right.
So
that's
everyone
exactly
will
right.
be around.
Because per the CBA, because Mike Vrabel's a new head coach, he gets a two-week head start on other teams in the league that have a returning coach. So you're right. There'll be a lot of guys in town. So I would assume, and I'm just guessing here, that there would be guys in uniform that are current players. And I'm excited. I'm anxious to see it just like you guys are.
Yeah, I can't wait to see, you know, how they have tweaked the uniform and the helmets next week. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be a lot of fun leading up to the NFL draft here at TitansRadio.com. And again, as we mentioned earlier, hashtag Titans Preview for questions. We really want to interact with our listeners of this podcast.
Keep those questions coming. Hashtag Titans Preview. We will answer the best questions every week and maybe just answer as many as we possibly can. But hey, thanks for you guys listening. We'll have more in the coming weeks. Draft, uniform, all these great things are happening, and it's a lot of exclusive coverage right here on Titans Radio. For Jonathan Hutton, I'm Rhett Bryan. Thank you for listening to Titans Preview.